My name is Liz Kirkus from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA Catskill and Hudson.
The Catskill Public Library staff loves having the WGXC programmers broadcasting during the week from our Carnegie Room. For information about using the space for a meeting of your own, please call the library at 518-943-4230.
This is Phyllis Segura inviting you to my new radio show, Eating It in the Hudson Valley, at 3 p.m. Tuesday, May 16th. My first guest is organic revolutionary Grace Gershuni. Future shows will cover all topics food-related, agriculture, farms and farm workers, local food producers, foragers, farm-to-school, food policy and justice, chefs and restaurateurs, and most definitely, recipes. May 16th at 3 p.m. on WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
I'll have some clam chowder followed by beefsteak on rye, pumpkin pie, whipped cream, and coffee. I want a green salad on the side. Don't forget the French fries, pizza pie, garlic and anchovy.
Good afternoon. This is Phyllis Segura. Welcome to the first airing of Eating It in the Hudson Valley. I'm calling this the appetizer show since the offerings are some basics or a ground for where to begin. I'll give you a recipe for a very basic meal later, something you can go back to keep nourishing yourself simply, and something you can always return to for a meal or a week of meals. One-bowl meals have become popular recently, though they've been around a long while. They were popularized at the recently closed restaurant Angelica Kitchen in New York, where they were called Dragon Bowls. The bowl actually had an image of a dragon on the bottom. They've also been called Buddha Bowls. More on that later. With so much confusion these days about what organic labeling is or isn't, a little bit of actual defining seems necessary. With that goal in mind, I'll be having a chat with Grace Gershuni. I'm setting the timer for 15 minutes for our conversation. When the timer goes off, it's letting us know our conversation is cooked. Grace is widely known as an organic consultant, author, and educator. As one of the early 70s organic grassroots back-to-the-land Vermonters, she organized regional conferences and developed an early certification program for the Northeast Organic Farming Association. She worked for the USDA in the 90s as the lead organic standards specialist to lay the foundations for the National Organic Program. It appears that all the work she did in the 70s made her the obvious choice. No one knew more or was so closely connected with the farmers who were making the changes. It seems like she is the person to ask, and I feel very grateful to chat with her today. She'll be speaking with us from her home in Vermont, where she still raises chickens and grows her vegetables. Her book, The Organic Revolutionary, a memoir of the movement for real food, planetary healing, and human liberation, is generally available, as well as the classic, The Soul of the Soil. I'll put some links up on our Eating It in the Hudson Valley Facebook page, which will serve as a conduit and where you can ask questions and make comments. Don't be shy. This conversation was pre-recorded due to scheduling considerations. By the way, Grace says she grew up in Kingston in the Roundout area.
I'm going to set a timer. I decided to use the digital timer so there's no ticking in the background. Okay. And I'm setting the timer for 15 minutes, which means that when the timer goes off, we're cooked, and then we'll just round out our conversation.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. I'd like you to discuss or tell us what organic is, actually, so we can clarify lots of current misconceptions. Really, what's the difference?
What's the difference between organic and what?
And not organic.
And not organic.
Or what they call conventional.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why I wrote my book, to try to explain it all in terms that anybody can understand, and in the context of my own experiences helping develop what organic means. So, you know, it's not something that I can give a bumper sticker sort of answer to, but you know, the differences are really about really a holistic difference. It isn't just one thing. It's really about a whole management approach to agriculture, and it's about a health-centric approach to food that isn't necessarily something that you can write regulations about or even analyze. So I think maybe one of the first misconceptions that I would point to is that, you know, organic is not a particular inherent quality of the food or the product. It is about how it was produced. And a lot of people kind of sort of get that, but don't really. And that's one of the reasons why it was so complicated to write standards, because it is really about the practices used or not used. And a lot of people, again, think that it's all about what's not used. And it isn't. That is certainly part of it, that we don't use highly toxic pesticides. We do use pesticides and other sides that come from you know, plants and so forth, but they're still heavily vetted. Some are not permitted, and they're generally things that, even if they are toxic, are used sparingly and only under conditions that require, that they justify the use of these things after having all else has failed. So that's a very big difference with mm-hmm. conventional production. The other thing is that, and this is built into the regulations in a way that a lot of people don't understand, is that organic farmers are required to improve or maintain soil quality, water quality, the natural resources of the operation, which includes biodiversity. So it isn't okay to, organic farmers may certainly use tillage the way conventional farmers do and are often criticized for using too much tillage, which burns up organic matter.
What is tillage?
And tillage is plowing and cultivation of the soil.
Right.
Okay. Ideally, the soil should be left as undisturbed as possible, but obviously that's not possible when you're planting a crop like corn or soybeans, or most annual crops. So some tillage is necessary. And there is a lot being done with no-till organic. It doesn't require herbicides, which is great, but not everybody can do that. But if you are careful about tillage, you will not degrade your soil, and you will not be releasing undue amounts of soil carbon into the atmosphere. So there are ways of making it better than just the way conventional agriculture tills. Those are some of the major things about organic, that it is really about doing practices that protect and preserve the soil and water quality and protect human health without disparaging conventional foods. So, you know, in order to get this into USDA and to get it approved, we certainly couldn't imply or state openly that, you know, this is superior in terms of protecting human health and the environment from to conventional agriculture, which is everything else. And some of it's fine and some of it's terrible. It's a large spectrum, and there's a spectrum within organic, but it doesn't go all the way to terrible, I would have to say. You know, some of it's excellent and some of it's just okay. At any rate, certainly what was in my mind, and those of us who were working on the standards when they were being written, was that even if we weren't explicitly stating that organic is better or organic has less pesticide residue or anything else that's truthful, what we were doing was educating people about how it is produced and how it is processed. And there are processing guidelines too. I mean, it's certainly possible to have overprocessed organic foods that are just as unhealthy as conventional foods, minus the pesticides and GMOs. But at least it's a little bit better. So those are some of the differences. I'm trying to remember. Oh, the idea that was in our mind is that basically, even though the U.S. government does not use the precautionary principle as a method of determining its policy on protecting human health and the environment as Europe does, what we were thinking is that, well, consumers and the public can exercise the precautionary principle themselves when they go to the store and see, you know, side by side two identically appealing products on the shelf. One is organic and one is conventional, not organic. And knowing that the organic version was produced without using these highly toxic synthetic pesticides, without damaging soil and water quality, without endangering farm worker health, and maybe it's a little bit more expensive. Maybe it's a lot more expensive, but it isn't costing the cleanup of the environment that is so expensive and difficult to do as a result of conventional agriculture, which is called an externality in economics. So they can decide for themselves, well, you know, I don't know if there's any proof that this is better. There is no way to analyze it in a laboratory and say, oh, yes, this is better, or even this is nutritionally superior. And that's a whole other question. You know, there's a lot of people who are learning about things like nutrient density. At any rate, we can't definitively prove that any particular organic product is better. We have some evidence that there are higher levels, for example, of the good fats and fatty acids in grass-fed meat products and dairy products. That there's quite a bit of evidence of that, and and organic is included in that. It may not be totally grass-fed, but it is required to be largely grass-fed. There are many complicating factors, and I think that one of the big issues now, and what I've been hearing, is that consumers don't understand why, you know, that organic is also non-GMO, and they're seeing that there's a non-GMO version that's available, so, and it's cheaper, so, you know, that why isn't that, that's just as good as organic, isn't it? Or or else they, you know, they're confused by a lot of the messages.
Exactly.
Coming out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, organic totally excludes the use of genetically modified organisms in any aspect of production or manufacturing. So not only will you not find any Roundup Ready soybeans or dicamba ready soybeans, which is what they're going to now, in an organic product, but you will not find any yeast that has been, you know, grown by a genetically modified yeast cell. You will not find any enzymes that have been produced by, you know, genetically modified bacteria, and on and on. If any product is made using a genetically modified organism at any point in its process, it is not allowed to be used. So, you know, it goes beyond just non-GMO. It really, there's no GMO. There may be no GMO material in the product in question, but it's still not permitted.
Well, it's good to know.
Yeah.
We've only got about less than 3 minutes left, unfortunately, for this talk. But that was great. And there's a recent story about the strawberries that are supposed to be organic using fumigants and pesticides. What do you think about those stories?
Well, that's completely bogus. I mean, you can't use fumigants or pesticides on strawberries. And I think what may have been confusing is that at one point there was, in California in particular, a one-year transition period permitted, and people were permitted to rotate their crops in and out of organic, which the regulations do not permit, and it's a three-year transition now. So what they would do is that they would fumigate the year before with their conventional strawberries, and there would still be a carryover when they planted their organic crop.
I see.
But that is not taking place, and it's not allowed, and it doesn't happen. So that story was a complete fabrication. But
what about things that are coming from China that are supposedly organic?
Well, the USDA has to accredit certifying bodies, and there was also a story recently that said, in the Washington Post, I believe, that said, was outraged that, well, farmers can choose their own inspectors even. How is that credible? And that is also untrue. So the point is that farmers, the choice that farmers make is to choose the USDA accredited certifying agent to visit their farms. And that the certifying agent then assigns an inspector to actually make the visit. And the inspector is not chosen by the farmer. You know, there is no buddy system there. There has to be no conflict of interest as well. So, and as an organic inspector myself, I can vouch for this. It's very rigorously observed. You cannot have any conflict of interest with an operation that you inspect.
I understand. But some people actually think that organics, that farmers can not have organic certification because it's so complicated, a papering process, and that they just say they're not sprayed with pesticides.
Well, they can say anything they want that's truthful, and if they don't use the organic label on their packaging, then it's okay. That's fine. You know, I don't think that everybody needs to be certified to use good methods. I can talk more at length about some of the farmer complaints another time.
Oh, well, let's revisit this another time. I've got a half hour show right now, but obviously you've got a lot of information to impart, and this would be great. And thank you so much for doing this and speaking to me on my very first show.
Well, I'm honored.
Oh, as am I. That was Grace Gershuni speaking to us from Vermont. I hope that was helpful. To get more of her story, there's her book, Organic Revolutionary, to read. Information will be on the Eating It in the Hudson Valley Facebook page. Go there for recipes and to ask questions or to make comments. Now for a recipe. Open the tunnel. Here comes the train. For years, the Angelica Kitchen in New York had as its most famous dish the Dragon Bowl. Since this is our basics or appetizer show, it seems like something as basic as a bowl of fresh food is a good way to begin. It's one bowl eating with a general formula, mix and match, a bowl of grains, greens, and protein, topped with a dressing or sauce of your choice. Try placing a nice dollop of a grain like brown rice or millet, then some steamed or roasted vegetables, some beans or seaweed, and salad greens in a bowl. Top it with a tasty sauce. This style has gotten very popular lately. Some now call it a Buddha bowl or grain bowl. I think I like Dragon Bowl best. The Buddha is actually a religious figure, so no one's going to call a bowl of food a Jesus bowl or a Moses bowl or a Mohammed bowl, realistically. There are even restaurants serving only grain bowls, well, in California. So when you don't know what to eat, here it is. The point here is to have a very basic meal that you can return to time and time again to feel well nourished. You'll know when that is. Try it for one meal or a few days. Sometimes the simplicity is addictive. Most of these ingredients can be made in advance. Steaming vegetables take so little time that in a competition with a microwave, steaming came in first. So keep it simple. Simple can still be creative. Here are some of the proportions to aim for. 30 to 60% grain, like brown rice, buckwheat soba noodles, millet, quinoa, barley, or some specialty rices. 10 to 20%, add some form of protein like beans or legumes, chickpeas, adzuki beans, black beans, or use meat protein if you like. It's your bowl. So a soy protein like tempeh or smoked or steamed tofu, even smoked fish. Then about 30 to 60% of steamed vegetables, leafy greens like kale, spinach, Swiss chard, or mustard greens or arugula. Then cauliflower, beets, squash, sweet potatoes, corn, broccoli. Go for color. Add some fermented foods like pickled beets, cornichons, sauerkraut, pickled ginger, or the popular kimchi. Then garnish with a handful of sea vegetables, kelp, dulse, nori, or hijiki. When it comes to sea vegetables, you have to make a personal decision. To or not to. Go to the Facebook page notes for some sourcing information and a recipe for the seaweed. Then top it with thinly sliced raw vegetables like red cabbage, carrot, sprout, spinach, zucchini ribbons, avocado, radish, or toasted pumpkin or sunflower seeds or chopped nuts. For some people, it's the sauce that makes these bowls so desirable. For instance, you can make a miso tahini sauce by combining water, miso, lemon juice or apple cider vinegar, salt and pepper with tahini or sesame seed paste. Some people add nutritional yeast. But be a little careful with this. You know, it's not like going to a salad bar and slopping everything into a bowl, you know, all your leftovers and so on. Not so fast. You can also top it with a dollop of a herb pesto. You'll find a recipe for gomashio, the sea salt sesame seed condiment that is one of the typically basic all-purpose condiments, on the Facebook page as well, in the notes. You just toast some unhulled sesame seeds in coarse sea salt, and then grind them together with a mortar and pestle, preferably with a shirabachi. That's a Japanese mortar and pestle. Keeps for a long time in a jar. My own recipe for a miso peanut sauce is also there. It's a creamy, protein-filled sauce to add to hot steamed vegetables. Even children like it. That's the show for today. Thanks to the organic revolutionary Grace. The next show is the second Tuesday in June. That's June 13th from 2 to 3 p.m. It will be an hour long, so I won't have to speak so fast. The topic is foraging. We'll talk with Dina Falcone and mushroom forager John Michelotti. Dina's website is botanicalartspress.com, and John's is CatskillFungi.com, and they're both having a workshop on May 21st. So if you want to attend those, check it out. The Facebook page is Eating It in the Hudson Valley. Same name as the show. So come on in my kitchen. We're going to eat some pie.
The world is just a great big onion. And hate and fear are the spices that make you cry. Oh, baby. And the only way to get free of this great big onion
is to play.
World is just a great